Hello and welcome to episode 26 of Chips of Chortland. My name is Neil and I am joined by three members of Dutch Uncles, as per usual, who are all staring at me
intently.
With very intense sort of eyes on our hair. Duncan.
Hi.
Robin.
Hello.
And Andy.
Hello.
And we are at Yes again. We can't get enough of this place, can we?
No, can't kick the habit, I suppose.
We really, really can't.
And I was DJing here at the weekend as well. I'm a bad penny, baby. Or the turd they can't flush.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, can't flush a bad penny. Yeah, that's the wrong thing.
As soon as I said bad penny, I knew I didn't identify as that penny.
So we're here. We are going, and I'm going to probably give the game away. We are going to go and interview Tom Fleming.
We are indeed. We can hear him sound checking right now. Actually,
feel those bass drones
creeping through the lovely parquet flooring here at the roof terrace.
Definitely. So we hope he knows where we are because we kind of start recording.
He does. I texted him yesterday. He texted me back some hours later. He knows the score. Don't worry. Yeah. He will be here. A microphone is ready for him. This is not Alan Partridge waiting on Roger Moore.
We'll know when he's imminent when the bass rumblings stop.
Definitely. Hopefully he'll be up soon. So we're just going to do a little bit of a catch up. So what you guys been up to since we recorded 2 weeks ago?
Robin, you've released a single.
Yeah.
And Robin, you've been on the radio and lots of other things.
How's it all gone, your single campaign, etc.? Has it gone all right for you?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. Been pretty positive response to the first single. Got the album, sorry, the EP coming out at the start of December, cool. Along with an interesting promotional week, which I won't give away yet. But also,
What a tease!
Oh yeah, I remember it.
Andy knows what it is. But also, I'm doing a gig next year.
A gig
on February the 20th at Band on the Wall.
Good on
you. The question that everyone wants answering is, do we have to buy tickets or are we on the guest list?
You, my friend, are on the cheap list.
I'll take it.
Is that jokes.
Let the record show that he only pointed at Andy on that.
Duncan's full prize.
I'm full price. I'll see you at the merch stand, right?
Where's the gig going to be?
Band on the Wall.
Lovely.
Yeah. And it's opposite Chili's, which is a fantastic kebab house. We can get lovely fish kebab after the gig.
So has anyone else been doing anything of any note?
Since we recorded the last episode, I lost my earplugs.
And then I
found my earplugs again. That's pretty much it on the music stance. Since then, I went away to Glasgow. Was it a holiday? I suppose it was a holiday of sorts. It was a city break away. I was kind of convinced I was going to bump into Paul Buchanan. You all know that I'm a huge Blue Nile fan.
Yeah.
I'm an absolute, what do they call them? Well, not fangirls or fanboys, but more than that. I'm fully assigned to the Church of the Blue Nile, especially from the lyricist point of view of it all. And I was really worried. I was just convinced I was going to bump into him all weekend. And this kind of all came to a head in quite a fearful manner when I found myself in the Hunterian Museum, surrounded by dissected pregnant women of the 1800s. And I was just really worried I was going to bump into him at that point, as if like that's where he went for his Sunday inspirations.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, Paul, what are you doing here? It's like, I come in all the time, you know.
I imagine him.
I'd be like, oh God, all right, that's the end.
I imagine him getting gently soaked in a sort of fancy-ish beer garden, drinking a glass of red wine, reading a short story perhaps.
I'd imagine that, maybe in the West End or maybe out wherever he lives in the parts of Glasgow. But unfortunately I didn't bump into him, although the feeling of bumping into a hero did happen when I bumped into Jeremy Corbyn on the way home. So that was interesting.
Of course, yeah.
What did Jeremy, is he a Dutch Uncles fan?
No. I don't think he's really a fan of anything. It's a very interesting aura that he carries. What I would say is that he had time for myself and my girlfriend. However, he also had absolutely no time for having any attention lavished on him in the most friendliest way.
Okay.
And it's an extraordinary ability to own. He is a man that wants to get on with his job. And I know you don't like this being a political podcast, although we are now in election mode.
Yes, we are.
But I was honestly astonished, taken aback, by just the energy of such a positive force, if I'm honest. I saw him walk past. I was like, I recognise that haircut and those glasses. Shouted his name. He looked back, kind of gave me his little chip tooth smile and a thumbs up, and I just went, mate! I couldn't believe it.
Completely
shook off the hangover, and I felt I was in the presence of a man who has potentially so much power to change the world, and yet somebody who wakes up every day knowing he's one of 8 billion or 7 billion, however many billion it is in the world. True humility in our leaders.
Did the feeling of meeting Jeremy Corbyn, did that compare with you meeting any of the sort of musical people that you've met in the past, sort of with Dutch Uncles or in any other regard? Like, has there been like a similar sort of feeling of, like, I suppose, like, overwhelming in a way?
No, not really. To my knowledge, I can't really think of any musicians I've met that I would consider in the same positive force. I mean, I don't think I've really met any musical heroes. But so
never been starstruck though.
No.
By a musician,
oh yeah, that's
really.
That's different.
Is that different?
Starstruck's different. Well, and this was a moment of being starstruck because it was a moment out of the blue. It came out of nowhere. Didn't expect to see him there. We knew he was in the city, but that was all just a coincidence. Didn't expect to get on the same train as him. But no, that's all down to, again, that's, I think the starstruck element of this is down to just the rare nature of it. I wasn't starstruck when we met Steve Reich, mainly because I didn't know the full capacity of who we were meeting, to be fair, at the time. And also, we all looked like shit, so I was too aware of how bad we looked.
I think we've mentioned this on a couple of episodes already. Any excuse to retweet the picture of the really blurry picture of us in our
have we met anyone, have we toured of anyone that you guys have been starstruck with?
I was very starstruck by Hayley Williams, Paramore. Not that I'd listened to a huge amount of Paramore. I think when I found out that we were touring with them, obviously I knew who they were. I knew who she was. I listened to bits and bobs. I wasn't particularly, like, musically starstruck. But because of the sort of cult of personality, this was someone who is famous in her own right outside of the band. Just that sort of almost, like, Hollywood figure. So, like, just sort of seeing her and saying hello to her for me was very surreal. It's a different way.
Yeah, like, I remember when we played with Flaming Lips, seeing Wayne Coyne backstage. Yeah. Like,
I wasn't starstruck by Wayne, but I was starstruck by his hair. Fantastic.
That was one of the things. His hair is amazing.
Beautiful mane. Yeah. Absolutely. It's so thick, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
very, thick. Very, very thick. Yeah.
I think with me, weirdly enough, it was Sean Lennon. You know, when we played
Liverpool Sound City.
So it was my fourth gig with you.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking out the window, and he was on after us, wasn't he? So he was in the trailer next to us.
Yeah.
And he just had this kind of really 1969 John Lennon outfit on.
He looks like John Lennon.
He's probably wearing his dad's clothes.
Holy shit. I couldn't stop looking at him. It was really, really weird. Other than that, I suppose Butch Vig a little bit.
I suppose.
But he was so nice, wasn't he? He was just so nice and friendly. It was just like, he was just that, all right, just Butch Vig at the end, wasn't he? So I just want to announce that Tom Fleming has just joined us. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How are you doing?
Nice to see you.
I'm doing well. I'm all the better for being here, to be honest. So, yeah, good. I'm good. I'm good.
Good. How was last night, Glasgow?
Last night, Glasgow was good, you know. It was a small but committed audience, which is like, not quite as good as a large but committed audience, but still but still good. Still
those are notoriously the best ones.
It was awesome. There's a lot of kind of... do I need to watch my language?
No.
All right,
not at all.
There's all like, get in there, you fucking legend, and this kind of thing. Thank you. This is good. This is good. I love you. Yeah, it was good. It was good.
Well, I suppose in regards to One True Pairing's journey on this, was last night your first headline show?
Not the first, but one of very few. Because we did a show in London, which was like in a pub, which is... We brought a PA in ourselves and built it, and it was like better than like most venues in Camden.
Yeah,
like just like a pub around the road from me. You're actually right. Yeah, I think I might be show number two as a headline. Yeah, it's been I tried to go in deliberately low key. It's kind of been accidentally low key since then. You know what I mean? Certainly, this is like, it's very early days for me at this point, yeah.
And whereabouts in Glasgow were you playing then? Like, what was the venue?
I was at King Tut's.
Oh, King Tut's. Yeah, classic. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, because obviously, you know, from the last shows from Wild Beasts era, certainly, you're kind of going back to, I mean, tonight you're playing in a very new, flashy toilet venue, but obviously, to go back to the toilet circuit, you know, as all wet. Is that what we call it? Do we call it the turn circuit?
I think this is Dutch Uncle's last gig was here.
I think the toilet circuit is now like an endearing term.
Yeah. We mean it in the most endearing sense. We're back to the small stage kind of circuit thing. How are you finding the transition back to that sort of way of life? Is it sort of bringing back memories of the first time round?
Performance wise, it's great. Being able to meet the gaze of everybody is really good. Obviously, in terms of three lads sleeping in a travel lodge and driving 5 hours after the show, that's not so great. But you do forget the kind of you're not able to hang out with people in the city because you've got to go straight away There's things you forget about. On balance, I really like it because for me the show is the most important thing. As I'm sure I don't need to tell you guys, but. Also, there are things I hadn't considered. Do you know what I mean? You do get used to certain things. In real terms, we were hardly a household name, but we had got a certain level of success. Hard won over a course of 10 fucking years. I'm reminded of because while we're still making records, and I thought good records, the last time when casual listeners might have been interested was probably 2010-11, which is a long time ago. It's geological time in music terms. So obviously I'm having to win people's attention, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think I read an interview that you sort of approached the album from a new act perspective, so not sort of part of any legacy, just wrote it as a new act. How was that? Did that sort of feel nervous or refreshing, or was there any anxiety related to that?
I mean, a lot of anxiety, a lot of anxiety. I think I was given a point to retire and decided not to. And every day I go is that right? Was that right? You know, but I do have a compulsion to do this. And I'm happy with what I made, of course, but there's always...
It sounds great, mate.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. But there is always a negotiation with what am I prepared to do? What's going to be required of me? Yeah. You know, making ends meet and that kind of thing is always a kind of conversation. I had to approach it as something new. I couldn't, this S word side project, do you know what I mean? I had to make it feel I'm committed to this. I have to kind of demonstrate, okay... This is me. This is what I've got to say. This is what I've got to add. And if I haven't, why would anyone bother with me?
Did you have anyone else to bounce the ideas off before you produce it, or was it just kind of
not before the producer really? Not before Ben Hillier. No. He had a big influence on the record. I had five, six songs before going in with him, and then we kind of worked on the rest. But they were very small scale songs, guitar and vocal mostly, and a few little. Synth ideas, but nothing really solid. All the stuff with this, all the Ableton stuff I've got going on is I've had to learn how to use that after the fact myself. So it's a bit of a hack job. I ask you guys not to look at the screen too hard. It was very much conceived of after the breakup of the band. Me working through my feelings, working through what do I want to say, what's interesting to me, what is what justifies this thing's existence, you know what I mean? It wasn't something I had an ambition to do, really. It wasn't I could finally write my novel. It was I had to have... What? It was something that happened in real time, you know? It was what do I want to do now?
Interesting. A question I was going to ask maybe a little later on, but we're kind of already in this subject matter now on the subject of side projects and things. Uh-huh. Because One True Pairing and obviously the album, it's a self-titled debut album. But at the same time, because it's called One True Pairing, it feels like there is almost a conceptual sort of side to that within its name. Would you say that there is a second One True Pairing album, or does it give you still the scope to actually go, you know what, the next album might be a Tom Fleming album? Do you know what I mean? There might be another guise to this. There might be another persona that you have to release after One True Pairing.
That's a good point. I am in my head right now. I want to do some more One True Pairing stuff because I think it's got the whole reason I chose the name. It's got loads of refractions. Do you know what I mean? This is a fairly in-your-face dark record at points, and I want it and then it kind of comes over like a romantic record. It's just nope, not having that. You're not getting that. You know what I mean? I think that kind of sucker punch and that kind of shifting the ground beneath the listener is something I really like to do. It's a trick I like to pull. I mean, obviously there's a limit to how many times you can pull it, but I think but there's not a lot of romance and fantasy and gentleness on this record. There's some, but I maybe thought maybe next time there might be a bit more space for that. You know
well,
what I mean?
Well, there's certainly some interpretive sass, I would say. I wanted to ask you, because of course, there are questions to be asked about sort of how does it feel when it comes to a new project like this. How does it feel having to explain yourself within press releases? Because we've all been there when you have to sort of give journalists
it's almost the most
just enough of an insight for them to ask you the same questions every time you come to an interview. Yeah, but at the same time, you want there to be mystery. You want everything to be about as many different things as possible.
Yeah,
you want it to be interpretive. And yet, what strikes me as really interesting on this album is the opening line. You're like, you don't get to tell me it's over.
Yeah.
Like that, I mean, in terms of side projects, that line is up there with Arctic Monkeys' latest opening line of "I only want to be one of the Strokes." For me, it's just like, how like with the benefit of hindsight as to when you recorded that to where we are now, how is that line sitting with you at the moment?
I think the whole album comes out asking it sort of starts on a question, ends on a question.
Yeah.
Or should I say it starts on a fuck you and ends on a fuck you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that whole song, I mean, like, I think I enjoy spitting that at the kind of the middle class chin strokers of the world. Do you know what I mean? Like, people who've never smashed alone in Ibiza. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, there is a sense of confrontation about it. That line is actually taken from the Hitman game.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, there's a point where you lock a woman in a sauna to kill her, and she goes, "No, you don't get to! You don't get to!" And she's so outraged and so indignant.
Amazing.
It's like, I'm taking that. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
There's a bit of that. There's a song, Elite Companion, and there's a line in The Witcher 3 where a guy goes, "Oh, yeah, all artists are whores." And I was like, that's it. That's what that song's about. That's what it feels like. You are to be used and cast aside. It's all kind of, you know what I mean? I wanted to have these channels open to, like, listen. I mean, obviously there is a lot of, like, introspection, but I wanted to kind of feel like it wasn't just me talking. You know what I mean? I was kind of, like, channeling a few things. But inevitably there is a sense of, like, you know, what do the kids call it? Clap back to that song, definitely.
Yes, yeah, that's what they call it. Yeah. My other question, sort of to carried on from that, is when I remember it, bloody hell, my mind's just gone completely blank. Hold on a sec. Blah, 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 da, 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 da. Oh yes, speaking about sort of being when it came to the end of Wild Beasts, you were very sort of you were very stoic on the line of being, well, you're an artist, you're a singer, you're going to keep doing this. Yeah. And you were very much, when you announced One True Pairing was going on, it was very early, you know, it was early on in the game, in the aftermath. And in a sense, like, when you speak of yourself as an artist, it's very unashamed. and we've been doing our research. You mentioned in a recent interview that you call the album unashamedly northern.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that necessarily?
Well, I think it's. I think the in the last few years, like, attention has shifted to big metropolitan centres as, like, this is where the art is. Do you know what I mean? And I think. This is very. All the lyrics are about people I grew up with, about the kind of environment that created this music, you know. So I think there is a sense in kind of, like, self. I get, like, not exactly self-representation, but, like, visibility. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I live these things, and the people around me live these things, and this is what I make of this. Do you know what I mean? It's not a. I didn't want to come over like I'm an artist. I mean, an artist in the sense of, like, an artiste in, like, a white cube posh art. That's not what I think art is. You know, I think it's. I think it should happen at a kind of, like,
a more kind of natural sort.
Yeah, for want of a better term, street level. Do you know what I mean? Should be. It should be about what things you see. And there's also, like, there's, like, a longing for escape on the record as well. There's also a kind of, like, brutal fatalism. I mean, I've lived in London like 9 years, and I feel like Ness never felt like home. I feel more northern than I ever have, really. There's a sense of, like, shit, none of these fuckers understand any of this. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that has really haunted me. You know, that sense of, like, I am still talking into the void. I am still, like, you know, we're living, like, the golden age of narrative and the worst time for nuance. And everyone's, like, talking about, like, oh, how these, what these things mean and what these things are. And it's like, honestly, it's still the same nepotistic shit. You know, it's everyone's the same people sat on top, like, deciding what is good and what is not. And it's like, what is valid and what is not. Yeah. And you get your moment in the sun and then back into the pit you go, and it's frustrating. And it's, and it's not, I'm not just voicing my own frustration, I'm voicing my frustration at, like, everything I see around it, these things do not get fixed, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so how's the election treating you?
Mate. Oh, my God. I can't believe we call it another one, it's a tough one because I live in like the safest of red seats in North London, and it's like, it's that one constituency over from Jeremy Corbyn, and it's like, it's, which, you know, I'm a Labour voter through and through, but it's like, it's also like Haringey Council, who are like, you know, selling off council houses, baby pee, you know, it's like, it's tough, it's tricky, because it's like, there is a complacency in the left, and like, almost that complacency in the left is kind of what I'm addressing, that kind of like, there's a sense of like, Brexit is a northern idiots. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we don't take any part in that. It's like people snorting coke and taking note, you know, I don't know why those kids are stabbing each other.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of complacency that really is really bothering me. And
that's the problem with discussions like that they don't like any nuance. There's no situation placed on that. It's just all broad terms. Yeah. But I suppose that's politics, and that's general elections.
Well, of course,
isn't it?
And more so these days. We have our little echo chambers, and like we sit in them, we feel good about the changes we're making. You know what I mean? It's really, it's fiddling while the world burns. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad that you found time to actually write lyrics within this temperament that the country's in right now, to be honest. Because as a lyricist, you know, from the lyricist of the Dutch Uncle side, I keep finding myself trying to start a song and going, what does this matter to all the shit that's going on right now? It's so hard to justify it, I think, to oneself. And just to go, what's worth actually putting down on song in a record at this time in the country?
And do you think sort of, well, I was going to say when it's all over, but maybe it'll never all be over now. Maybe we've just moved on to a different paradigm
move on
of politics.
To another thing,
But do you think sort of political lyrics would be a better sort of now in the thick of it, or better sort of like with hindsight, looking back on it?
I mean, I think it's a constant negotiation. I think it's like, never feel bad for like writing in difficult times, whatever you're writing, because that's like, that's like the only thing you have. Like when I use music, it's like the only thing I can think of to not be passive, to like actually like offer a perspective and offer some opinion. And that doesn't have to be like broad. I mean, I think I paid because of like the narrative around this record is that it's a political record. Like, it's not really. It's more just addressing conditions that create the bullshit we see. You know, so it's like it's. Yeah. There is a political bent to it, but it wasn't supposed to be like a Kate Tempest record polemic. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It was like,
I think it goes back to what you were saying before about what art should be and how. Yeah, obviously the political situation
is pretty
bizarre as well at the moment. But it's like, we still need to make art, you know. And if we are artists, then we can still make art. Then it doesn't necessarily matter if we're enjoying doing it.
Because the album often, I mean, if people writing about political situations and situations and communities in general are often a sort of like snapshot in time, sort of the period that you have to write lyrics. I wonder whether this sort of whole there's so much going on. The difference between a snapshot of sort of political lyricism would be better sort of with complete hindsight of the whole lot. But I don't know when that ends. So.
There is something to there's something about like not writing when something's hot, which is interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like I tend to write things a few times removed. I kind of throw things into the fermenting jar, then pick them out later. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's my process is dog shit. Like it's not neat. Do you know what I mean? It's not like I have something which I do every time.
Robin writes all our music on Sibelius before it happens. When I watch the preach process.
I saw quite an inspirational quote from King Gordon today, actually, saying that when it comes to your own writing, you just have to lower your standard and just kind of like just go like just relax about it. Just start with something and then let it get better.
It takes a great deal of trust in yourself to like think that oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Someone would find that interesting. While it's true, you have to be. I don't always have that constant strength it requires to create. Do you know what I mean? That sense of like, oh God, I can do this because I'm interesting. And this is another thing. This is another class thing, of course, isn't it? Like, people just have the confidence, oh, I'm just going to do this today. And then they just do it. And people love it. And it's like, why did I do that? It's because you're just resting with it the whole time. You know,
talk yourself out of it before you even go out of bed.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. In regards to the dynamic live, when you're on stage now, are you sensing a different persona when you go on stage from, say, the Wellbeats era, or especially now that you're doing headline shows? Because before this, you were on the support tour circuit with local natives and stuff, and that's a bit more, that's always like, you've got half an hour and it flies by.
It's a bit more, you have to be a bit more
now you're characterising the one true pairing show in a sense. Yeah. And I suppose you're doing it, that you'll be doing things that you're not even aware of until when you look back on it. But how does it feel in terms of your persona? Do you feel like it's a different persona than you were before?
Well, I mean, I am the lead singer now, so there's a sense in which I kind of have to come out, right, listen to me, you know. And I think lyrically that might make, you know, that makes sense. And I mean, I sing really loud as well, which doesn't hurt.
You've got it.
But I mean, even the ballads sound like I'm going to knock people out. Do you know what I mean? It's like that's got that kind of aesthetic to it. So, inevitably, there's a seriousness, but an absurdity, but a seriousness to it. Do you know what I mean? There is the kind of Def Leppard guitars versus the kind of there's a lot of lyrics about kind of unhappiness, poverty, violence, depression, those kind of things, alongside whacking great guitar solo, big drums and stuff. And so that kind of thing is I'm kind of walking, you know. So I hope, and you have to ask people to come with you on that. You know, might be rather rich cake if you're not expecting it, I think.
I suppose as well, because it's a new project and it's a new sound and it's a whole new set of songs of, as you say, a whole new ethic and philosophy behind them. Do you feel that there's more pressure to get them right live? Because I suppose, you know, I definitely feel like, you know, with Dutch Uncles, when you're doing your fifth album tour, you're just like, well, if we make a mistake, people know how the song goes. It's fine. You know what I mean?
I don't think we really like that. I think we criticize heavily.
Anyone makes a mistake, we point at them.
You're the lead singer, you don't care. But
in the past, we've made mistakes so well that people think we've actually put them in the set. It's like, no, actually, that was a mistake. We just knew exactly how to pick up from there.
We just had to count that 7, and we counted 9.
But with one true pairing, it's like is there that relaxed sort of ability?
We made a load of mistakes last night, but I think there's a sense in which you're in the room with me. Do you know what I mean? So I want it to feel a bit. I don't want it to feel like it's so intense and focused that we can't have a good time. Do you know what I mean? That sounds really cliched, but I do want it to feel like it's a rock show. You know, it's not.
But there's still a difficult balance to strike with that. Trying to depict it accurately so that you're happy and you know it sort of feels flexible enough so people can sort of get on board with it.
Well, truth be told, I don't know I'm doing it right yet. Do you know what I mean? It's quite early days, so I'm kind of I'm still working it out. I mean, I'm coming out with conviction. I think that's really important.
Well, that's the main thing people pick up on, I guess, as well.
And also, we've got absolutely fuck all gear on stage. We've got 8 channels going down the PA, so it's I think people expect us certainly for support shows. People who are these startups, and actually my 6th album and come out don't expect that level of commitment, I guess. Do you know what I mean? Listen to me and that helps. That kind of that sucker punch helps, I think.
Well, I suppose a good indicator of that is the in-store tours as well, because you did one recently. How was that?
They're okay. I mean, some were good, some weren't.
It's weird, isn't it? It doesn't discriminate the in-store tour, does it? I think everyone ends up having one. We've definitely had so many embarrassing encounters where you show up to a record store with 4 amps. It's like, what the fuck's going on here?
26 keyboards.
Two people having coffee just finish up and leave.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Well, Beastie turned with a monitor desk and an Ableton rig. It was embarrassing. It got really Spinal Tap. It's just like, this is stupid. But yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, I like that kind of thing. I have to think, I'm a singer, here I am. But inevitably, it can be hard to make people care. You know what I mean? That is the truth.
Before you got here, we were talking before about times where we've been actually starstruck by people within the industry, because I was away in Glasgow just last weekend and ended up I was convinced I was going to bump into Paul Buchanan from Blue Nile, and instead I ended up bumping into Jeremy Corbyn.
It's hilarious.
I was just like, wow, okay, well, that was different, because you just have an air of something like, I'm going to meet someone this weekend, and it just happened.
I don't get that feeling, but that must be strange. because
I'm going to put it down to the romance of Glasgow, strictly that.
I mean, Glasgow's a great city. I really love it.
Yeah,
but I know Paul Buchanan came to a YB show.
Did he?
Yeah. Whoa. He is the nicest man in music. He is like so low key and down to earth. And it's like, you know, you're the Paul Buchanan, right? You know, all these other motherfuckers aren't Paul Buchanan. Do you know what I mean? But no, he's I mean, I'm a huge Blue Nile fan. I love his solo work. And he's super nice. Like,
Oh, yeah, so you met him?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he came to YB show and like enjoyed it. And it's like, you enjoyed the show, Mr. Buchanan, you know.
Mr. Buchanan.
I know that Tom and Hayden are part of the Paul Buchanan songwriters crew. There's a small WhatsApp group going on. Like, we're all just there, just fanboying and fangirling.
I mean, if anyone could get through Cars in the Garden without being in bits, or mid-air without, you know, what's that line about, like, the girl I want to marry up on the high trapeze the day she fell on her knees?
Yeah.
It's like, for God damn it, it comes out of nowhere.
And only time can make you the wind that blows away the leaves.
It's incredible. Yeah, he's an amazing songwriter. And I love how he takes like 10 years to make a record and then just like, that's my record.
I know, as soon as he brings it out, it's just the most heartbreaking thing you've ever heard in your
life. And the best thing is, there's nothing on it. It's not like he's working on the arrangements. It's just like, it's piano and vocal, mate.
Yeah. Like, And maybe a trumpet far off on a hill somewhere.
Yeah, a single general MIDI cello or something.
But is there anyone in your musical journey, career, if you will?
Career,
Is there anyone in your musical journey that you've met that you've been genuinely like absolutely taken aback, didn't know what to say to them?
Yeah, Michael Jira from Swans. I'm a huge Swans fan.
Oh, okay.
I actually interviewed him later. I interviewed him for the NME of all things, but... But yeah, when I first met, I was just like, I saw you here, and I saw you here, and I saw you here, as you do. And I was really bad. I was trying to think. I mean, I've been to shows. I was just kind of like, I went to see one of the last Kate Bush shows at Hammersmith. I forget it's audio, but like, I was like pie-eyed. It was incredible.
Spin the yarn. Myself and Rob went as well.
I was like a few rows back. I was like almost close enough, but not quite.
I went to the last one.
The last one of the lot.
You literally got a standing ticket for the last one.
I feel like I got the last two tickets because me and my now wife were standing up. But we had the only standing tickets in the whole venue. It's so bizarre. It's like there's so many people like, but why are you standing? It's like, we've got standing tickets.
Were you sat on the side where she kind of gets brought down?
I was. And there were just women crying all around me.
It was such a good gig. Yeah. I saw Noel Fielding there, actually.
Did you get Noel Fielding? All I got was, I don't want to sound shortchanged by this.
Top Trumps.
No. I had a Sue from Great British Bake Off fame, the original series, and obviously Sue and Mel.
Of course, she's pretty famous.
Yeah, she is famous. But then you had Grace Jones and Noel Fielding.
I did feel a little bit shortchanged by that.
I remember like being backstage at Glastonbury and seeing Skin from Skunk Anansie walking around.
Ooh.
She was literally had basically a woman in either arm. It's like, that's Skin. That's definitely. I mean, she's unmistakable. But like, I was a huge Skunk Anansie fan when I was younger. I was just like, you're so cool. Oh my god. I didn't meet her because she just passed me by. I was just like, oh my god, it's Skin.
Yeah. I think I'd be like that with Len or something like that. Not that Len would ever be playing.
Would you recognise Len?
Scooters along. It's like, oh my god, it's Len. Shat on that. Sorry.
I think because I tend to see people like in context, like backstage at a festival, you see a famous musician. It's like, of course they're here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You go over there, and you're kind of a bit of a dick. But I remember once I was in a lift with Steve Albini in a Primavera, and he looked at me just like, don't talk to me. I was like, okay.
Well, at least you know where you are. It's better than starting a conversation. And,
well, I'm sure he must have come up as a possible option to produce a Wild Beast record.
We were far too fiddly for that. It probably would have been good because it's sometimes what we needed, but like, we fiddled and the synths everywhere and tracks everywhere and like over demos and that kind of thing. So like, it would have been interesting. It wouldn't have been natural, but it would have been interesting, I think.
Yeah.
I think he was mentioned for us one year at one point.
He was always mentioned for us, but it was like, we haven't got the budget.
It's a similar issue as well, because I think the idea was that he gets bands into a room, it's like, play these tunes, those are the recordings, that's what it is, minimal overdubs. And I think for us, it would have been like... We tinker with stuff too much.
We'd probably end up taking them afterwards.
Yeah.
Or the MIDI.
I'm all for someone that just squeezes the job out and just gets you to do it, like, like you've just made a White Stripes record, but I really don't think it would have helped us.
I guess the work with John Congleton was a bit like that, where we did Boy King. It was like he was just smashing through. We like got the drum sound up in like 40 minutes and like Mick was mixing three tracks a day. It was just like, anything else you want me to do? He's like, no, sounds good, don't touch it.
How scary do you find it that the lyrics and themes portrayed in Boy King have pretty much manifested themselves into real life in regards to certainly the leaders of the Western world currently, this fake masculinity? How do you feel about that?
If I may be allowed to kind of set the record straight on that record, I think people didn't respond very well to. It was a controversial record because it was kind of like, we went from being kind of like whimsical indie boys into being like embodying this kind of like, essentially embodying the stuff we were always critiquing, you know what I mean? Critics didn't seem to have the intellectual capacity to deal with it. They were just like, what are these guys doing? Oh God, like clutching their pearls.
Yeah,
this is fucking obvious. What are you talking about? And I think you know, we were kind of like taking on the kind of like hair metal-y kind of like thing, but it's kind of like, same thing I guess I'm doing once repairing. It's kind of like satirizing, but also really embodying it and really like, I'm actually enjoying myself here. Do you know what I mean? It's interesting. And it's interesting to see that like, to feel, I hesitate to say this, I'm going to say this here and nowhere else, that like, I think it might have been a bit ahead of its time. Conceptually at least, I don't know about sonically, but in terms of like, what we're on about, it's kind of like, people are kind of like, it's there now, do you know what I mean?
You're talking to the guys that tried to bring back 7-4 to the game, so don't worry about
in
it
every
like,
song.
You're in second
company. We would, if we had the chops to do so, we would have done that, but I mean all the ones repairing stuff is fucking straight 4-4.
Yeah,
it's absolute three chords. It's total like cowboy chords, like,
can't even imagine.
Neil, how are we doing on time?
We're good. Yeah, it's all good. Keep going if you want. We edit this, by the way.
Okay.
So yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, basically, because usually we do a piece about. There was one, like, because you usually do a thing called what stupid fucking questions that. However, because this has been so last minute to organise this, that basically I've got some of your tweets that we just want to ask you about, like, where do they come from?
Please,
at the time.
Yeah, please.
But I suppose
I didn't know that you started on social media. And
yeah, I've got a blue tick on Instagram, but not on Twitter. It's a sore point.
It'll happen, mate. It'll happen.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I hate Twitter. It's like you open a box of shit and find a turd inside. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and all the people you unfollow because they get you down are like followed by people you follow, so that you see their content anyway. It's
I don't
want to know about the new Dua Lipa record. I do not care.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because the first tweet of yours that I want to bring up that's actually in my phone. Actually, fuck it, I'll start with a simple one.
All right.
Okay, so the first tweet of yours that, because you've only been on Twitter since June, haven't you?
Yeah,
so it's kind of like a
recent thing. Yeah, yeah. Well, I abandoned it because it was a Wild Beast Twitter. I just like, I'm not touching that anymore. I can't be bothered with it.
Yeah,
like,
no. Okay. Well, yeah. I'm trying to remember the whole phrasing of this, but whilst I'm trying to remember the whole phrasing of the first tweet I've got, the second one I've got here just says cock piss pairing. So, I mean, obviously we know where that comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
But why did that come from? So two questions: how and why.
Well, we're spending a lot of time in travel lodges, travel taverns,
of course,
up and down the country, dual carriageways, ring roads. It just put me in mind of there's a tragicomic thing about being a solo artist.
Yeah.
That kind of sense of like, I'm a huge rock star and here I am in my travelodge.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's that kind of like, that just felt like, yeah, that's what it, and I love the bafflement of it, because obviously like, if you're a Brit of a certain age, you know exactly what I'm talking about, but if you don't, just like, what is this?
Yeah. Well, in regards to the this might have been what you were saying about Dua Lipa before, but one of your tweets was, when stuff flashes up from accounts you deliberately unfollowed because they got you down, because people you do follow them, what a feeling.
Yeah.
What got you down?
Oh, well, it's just, I think the constant assault of people shouting their opinion really loud, as if that makes it true.
Yeah.
And Twitter is the worst for that. Like, the single worst platform for that.
Yeah.
It feels like there's a fine balance. Had it not been for the Dutch Uncle's Twitter account, I don't think I ever would have got one personally. Because remember, I had to get one personally because there was a fake one of me that came up.
Yeah, yeah.
I was following. It was. Oh, it was horrible. It was a fake account following four people, wasn't it? Peter Mandelson, Oxfam, Night and Day Cafe, I think, and I've forgotten what the other one was.
Maybe Waitrose.
Maybe it was Waitrose.
Years ago as well.
Sure.
And basically, it said things like, "Oh God, I've just been trying to find the right hair shower gel in Morrison's. But they didn't have it. I was so obsessed, I stared at the floor for 10 minutes. Or something like, I've been watching Doctors with a cucumber sandwich. I don't know where this came from.
A fake one with your name.
Yeah. So someone made a fake one of me. And then, Andy, you said to me at the time, it's like, Duncan, I think this is time for you to get your actual Twitter account to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Was it one of your bandmates? I mean...
Well, no. We never got to the bottom of who it was.
No.
There are theories, and I'm not going to put them on microphone.
I feel like you should ask some questions around the table.
Okay, I got another one for you. Okay, here's something... hold on. Oh, yeah, here's a question for you. Earlier, just maybe last week, perhaps, not heard Jesus is King yet, too busy trying to remake Cootie Montage. Yeah. Any good? Have you listened to Jesus is King yet?
I haven't.
Have you not?
I'm quite selective about coming to new music. I like to let the heat die down before I listen to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, with social media, it's everybody chatting shit about it. It's just like, yeah. I just want to listen to it.
Yeah.
I want to listen to it in my own time and pick up what it is away from the hype of it. You know.
Of course. Are you a fan of Kanye's work?
I do. I'm a big fan of Kanye's work. I mean, he's a troubled character, but like...
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I think what he's done... In, you know, as a broad on a broad brush, I think what he's done is fucking undeniable. Is, you know, incredible stuff. Like right back to all the kind of like college graduation, like Yeezus is incredible. Mm. Like I think the stuff with Kid Cudi is really good, which I was talking about there. Mm. But yeah, I mean, the whole Kardashian thing and the whole like Make America Great Again thing is just like, I mean, it's the constant schlep for headlines is a bit. I think it tells us about ourselves, put it that way. You know?
I think it's just worth, like, people who do actually kind of pay attention to the day-to-day business of Kanye and that whole diatribe. I think it's just worth them remembering that if you're part of reality television, even if you're part of, like, music, when you're recording your thoughts into lyrics, say, once you put something out there for the purposes of entertainment, the authenticity of it is automatically skewed, even if what you meant was 100% honest. People can't take what you said straight away, because obviously his whole move into Christian music, apparently I was talking to somebody in my hairdresser's, it's a hairdresser's, not a barber's, because it's out in Altrincham. But there was a conversation.
Duncan's hair looks good, by the way.
It does, actually.
It does, I was going to say that before.
It kind of looks a bit like yours, Andy, so thank you.
You've got actually some good hair around there. I mean, I've got a hat on, so, but there's some good hair on this table.
But I was doing that sacrilegious thing of actually having a conversation with another person's barber as opposed to your own whilst you're getting your hair cut, which really is quite filthy.
You were lucky to go away with that.
Yeah. It's really is quite filthy. But we were talking about Kanye, and he was saying about how he'd had an argument with Kim on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Now that he has this Christian movement, he wants her to dress a bit more modestly for things like award ceremonies. And then she gets really upset, and it's an argument. And he was trying to say that, isn't it messed up how that's happening? I was like, well, no, not really, because it's on TV. You can't trust anything that's on TV. It's reality television. Once something's out there, you don't know whether they actually meant that or not, even if they did mean that.
Of course not.
And that's basically the thing that they have to battle with. But my final note on Kanye is that I've used this in a negative sense before, but the whole Adrian Mole style of diary pop, he has done that in the best way possible, I think. You know what I mean? In a way that I don't see it as cynical. I think had Jay-Z ever opened himself up in this same way, you might see Jay-Z being a bigger identity than he is. Yeah. I kind of feel like that's the difference between Jay-Z and Kanye, is that Kanye is the one that's just gone, you know what, fuck it, I'm BPD and this is where it goes. Like,
it's also I can see him kind of like aping Bowie a little bit as well, as a kind of like deliberate kind of like discarding of the past and stuff. I mean, I think a lot of that is a pose, but like it's always Bowie, and who cares? Do you know what I mean? But listen, I'm not making a direct comparison in terms of like quality or anything. I just think that like, that's maybe part of what's happening. That kind of like the leak. Oh, like Dylan used to do. Like, he's trying to lead the narrative.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it works, because, I mean, everyone is talking about it, and no one cares what the little people are doing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I mean about the golden age of narrative, is just everyone wants to, like, attach a greater meaning to, like, bullshit. You know, like, people are attaching greater meaning to Cardi B, and it's like, how has this happened? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now I get that. Okay, another tweet. We'll move on. Another tweet. this might just be Travelodge talk again, but my whole career requires you to bend over and find a crude likeness on the skirting board. What room were you in?
I was watching Father Ted.
Oh,
it's like and you bend over. You're quite. I don't know if you remember this episode, where Father Bishop, there's a bet that Ted Crilly loses and he has to kick Bishop Brennan under the arse. And you bend over and you look, because, oh yes, a crude likeness is drawn, and Ted Crilly kicks you up the arse. And days later, you're in the music industry, days later you realise he did kick me up the arse. You're going about your day, you've done the best you can, then suddenly you realise I've been shafted. And that feeling never goes away.
Nah.
That's a wonderful comparison.
I was going to say, the last one I'll bring up here is...
I've only got like 20 tweets or something.
Oh, no, exactly. No.
It's a very small writing.
Let me tell you, Tom, it's a rich tapestry. Sure, exactly. So another one I'm going to bring up here is zero people listening now.
Yeah, I've got...
What was that?
You have...
Was it a streaming gig or something?
Yeah, you have... You're given an app called Spotify for Artists, which doesn't let you listen. That lets you like keep track of your own numbers, and it also gives you a live total of who's listening to you now.
Yeah.
And I was in the middle of the night, just like zero people listening now. It's like, yeah, that's sums it up, doesn't it? Sums up the feeling. This is what big data does.
Yeah.
gives you insights into how few people are listening to your new record.
Yeah.
But it was nighttime though. Everyone was sleeping. Everyone, you know.
Also, you've been sharing a Twitter friendship with Low the Band. Low the Band? The band called Low.
Yeah.
About how to pack a van properly. Packing a car in your case.
They've got a whole series about packing, which is
I've seen
got
some
even
of those.
Finer, hasn't it? Like, I assume you've got it down to an absolute T.
It's pretty good, yes. But touring in a car, like, it requires you to be. Efficient.
Yeah. Do you find that keyboard stands are still the worst thing to carry in and out of gigs?
Yes.
I find that.
They require the most manpower with the least sort of satisfaction.
Yeah.
Like you bring in three keyboard stands max, maybe.
The
per
least
person,
kind of ergonomic.
And then it's like you've still got basically everything else.
I'd like to put a vote in for drum weights here, like stage weights. Yeah. They're pretty thankless.
Yeah,
or like any drum hardware. It's like, why are we carrying scaffolding?
Yeah. I mean, this has got wheels.
This might sound like nonsense to the listeners, but this really is what keeps the sanity going on tour. You have to think about these things.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I enjoy doing a kick drum every now and
you
then.
You do. That's your thing.
Especially if it's quite a tight, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, that's the thing that makes you feel like, well.
that's the thing that makes you feel like you've done good in your day.
Yeah.
24 is very big, right?
Yeah.
That sounds big.
Yeah, it's big.
I just remembered actually when we toured with you guys, I got a Facebook reminder. It was 8 years ago. Last week that we started the tour. And we played in Leeds and we were unloading our van and Chris helped us with all the gear. And then I don't know if it was you or Ben or Hayden shouted at him because he would never help with the Wild Beast gear, but he helped with all our gear. Like,
that sounds right. Well, Chris is like 6'5" and has a lot of drums. It's just like, oh well, your problem.
Yeah.
So that became a thing. Yeah. Why have I got nowhere to stand? I was like, well, Benny's got 3 amps and Chris is 6'5". And it's like, fuck's sake.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Chris dragged my like Traps hardware case and Mark Riley took my kick drum.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Celebrity Road Crew.
Not to name drop.
I suppose the only final thing to ask is a question we always ask all of our guests is because we started this podcast pretty much on our 10-year anniversary of being a band, and we kind of tried to characterise it as much as possible with 10-year lowlights or horror stories.
Oh, least. Christ,
yeah.
You got any kind of 10-year low you'd want to put out there? Maybe something to do with Manchester, considering you're here?
Oh, God.
Like
I've always had a pretty good time in Manchester. Mm. I did once puke on a tour bus in Manchester. But that was because I've been out with a friend and we went to the Corner House Cinema. There's a bar there. Is it the Corner House by Oxford Road Station?
Yeah.
And Eric Cantona was in there.
What?
So that sparked... Eric Cantona. We didn't go up and say anything. We just got drunk because in celebration...
You didn't tell me you're a Blackburn fan, did you?
I'm a Blackburn Rovers fan, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're in Manchester and Eric Cantona's there. It's just like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the king of Manchester is here, you know.
That is bizarre.
That's not really a low light, but... I think it was the following day, I got food poisoning, I got left behind, puking my guts up in a petrol station in Eindhoven, and the bus went without me. I had no shoes on, vests and jogging bottoms, already covered in puke. I'm a type 1 diabetic, I didn't have any medication or food with me, no phone, no money, no anything. So eventually got picked up 11 hours later.
A
woman let me sleep in her car and gave me clothes from Lost Property. Whenever I hear like tour stories about getting left behind, I always absolutely smoke that.
So 11 hours, was that like 5 hours in then realizing that you weren't turning around?
It was a sleeper bus, so it was overnight. It was about 3 in the morning, so they woke up just like, and it was April Fool's Day. So nobody believed them. And the only number I could remember was my dad's. I was just like, can you call them up? You know, can you like find out? I had to like go through like email some people to find out like my tour manager's number to call him. It was April Fool's Day. And like, I remember the story is like, we've left Tom behind. And Chris was like, fuck off.
Was there something in your head that might, because it was April Fool's Day, that you thought they might have just drove the bus like round the other side of the service station?
It became quickly obvious. It was like, no, that's not happened.
That is bad. That's, I think that's the worst.
That's outrageous. Yeah, that's that's
genuinely
that is literally that is like the Lars von Trier of 10 years. I'm just shocked.
There's been a lot. I mean, come on, like you guys know, like if you've got a long career, it's like not every gig can be a classic. Do you know what I mean?
No,
and not every audience you necessarily want to continue to play to after a few songs. That's how it goes, you know.
Exactly.
I'm just trying to think of examples, but I mean, I should have had some time to prepare because there will be countless. Like.
Don't worry. That was truly sobering. So well done.
Yeah. I mean, don't do that.
Always
let your driver know where you are. And keep your phone on you, for God's sake.
Yeah. Don't get home alone.
And that's it for episode 26. Big thanks to Tom Fleming, One Tree Pairing, for taking time out between soundcheck and gig to come and talk to us. The next couple of weeks we'll be releasing our Sunderland Sessions podcast, so we'll kind of get them out before Christmas. Thank you very much. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter @ Chips of Chorlton. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next time.